welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Hi there, my name is Mark Shiver, and we are very excited that you are listening to today's podcast. And what a podcast it is. I am so excited. Our good friend Marty Kotis, who is one of the more successful developers in the state, primarily in the middle part of the state, Greensboro and other areas in that basic geographic location, but also in Raleigh, Marty is on the UNC Board of Governors. And as you know, or maybe you don't know, but there is a bill in the General Assembly that talks about reducing the number of the Board of Governors from 32 to 24. And we're going to get Marty's thoughts as someone who serves on the Board of Governors as to what impact that might make, how he feels about that legislation, whether he thinks it's a good idea, bad idea, or no opinion whatsoever. But trust me, Marty has an opinion. And you know what? It's a guaranteed thing. I can assure you that Marty Kotis is one of the more savvy people, I think, in the entire state, not only in business, but when it comes to things like education. And you're going to enjoy his thoughts on the Board of Governors competition in education. And I'm going to ask him what he sees as priorities from his position as a serving member on the UNC Board of Governors. So this is a fantastic opportunity to get some inside perspective from someone who serves and serves well on the UNC Board of Governors. So strap in. It's going to be a great interview. And on the other side, I'll catch up with you and talk to you about what's coming up in the future here on What Matters in North Carolina. It's always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, Marty Kotis. He is a developer in the Greensboro area primarily, but other parts of the state as well. Very successful and also a member of the UNC Board of Governors. Marty, welcome back.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
Well, I wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about a piece of legislation that's floating around the General Assembly that would reduce the 32-member Board of Governors down to 24. And is this a good idea, bad idea? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a good idea. You know, when you get to that large of a board, it's very difficult for everyone to weigh in on an item. You can imagine if we all just spent 5 minutes talking, that'd be over a couple hours worth of time. So it, making the board a more manageable size makes a lot of sense. I think also when you have a much larger board like that, you really tend to just kind of cede control to whoever is running that organization in terms of the general administration.
So my initial thought, and maybe this just speaks to an issue of my own, but I would be thinking that somebody's going to suddenly get left off or left out, and how are they going to feel about that?
Well, it's a big time commitment. You know, for me, I spend about a week between the meetings and preparation for it. So when you're doing that 8 or 9 times a year, that's a pretty big commitment. So,
yeah.
I can't really speak for other people in terms of what they would think about it. From my perspective, I only really want to serve on a board if I feel like I can make a difference.
Right.
And so if I can, great. If I can't make a difference, then what am I doing there?
Yeah. Well, what are some of the things, back to this 32 to 24, your thoughts, have you heard anything? Do you think this is being well received, not only by yourself, but by other members of the board? And do you think you don't have a crystal ball, obviously, but do you think it'll probably pass?
I would think so. I would think it would pass. I think all we've heard so far is a few people on the House side that have said that they were not going to be rejoining the board. But other than that, I really haven't heard anything.
Yeah. One thing, the News and Observer had an editorial recently about this very topic, and it was on Sunday, and they said that not only should they go ahead and reduce the size of the board, but that it's not diverse enough. Partisanship and racial makeup were two things that they had talked about. As somebody who sits in the meetings, do you feel like those are issues, or do you feel like the work is able to get done without those types of concerns?
I really don't. I think there's plenty of diversity in the room.
Uh-huh.
In terms of different viewpoints being expressed. And that's really the only diversity to me that is important when you're covering ideas and how to run a business is diversity of ideas and suggestions out there. I don't think there's any difference in terms of opinions that are coming out of a person's mouth, whether they're one race or another, one gender or another. So I'm not sure that really means anything other than appearances. When we're sitting in there, really, sometimes you couldn't tell who a Republican is or Democrat based on the commentary.
Yeah.
And again, you get people speaking on behalf of HBCUs, for instance, and other people commenting about other items. So I really just don't. I don't think that there's an issue with diversity of ideas or representation of the schools right now.
You know, that I find that fascinating, Marty, because I think that comment or that response really speaks to the fact that, at the heart of the matter, you're a businessman and you're a successful businessman. And, if it works, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. So I think that's an admirable perspective and one that you bring to the board that I think is very valid and very very relevant. So I really believe that's I wish more people felt that way, actually. Instead of worrying about numbers, worry about ideas.
Thank you.
So speaking of the board and the Board of Governors and all that, under the new leadership, have you noticed anything particularly different in terms of since Margaret Spellings has come on board, or things pretty much, it's hard to tell, when you get to that far at the top?
In bureaucracies that size, I think they all have a fair amount of similarities. I think that the new president and her administration are kind of finding their way right now. Think there are, some things that she's doing that are very interesting, and some of the staff she's brought on, and there's some other things she's doing that maybe I'm not as keen on, but I think this is a matter of balance out there, and you kind of see what the board wants to do as well.
In terms of some of the priorities that you feel are important, in particularly during this legislative session, other than the size of the board, is there anything that's at the top of mind that you feel like is important to be addressed during this legislative session?
I've been on the board about 3.5 years now, and I've learned that you have to narrow your focus down to the things where you feel like you really make a difference. And so mm-hmm. there are three priorities for me. One is construction and capital spending. It's a significant amount of money. And being a private developer and seeing what we pay for things and then seeing what the bureaucracy pays for things is disheartening, because it's all of our taxpayer money being spent.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a small amount of dollars here. When you're talking about $1 billion worth of new capital spending or $400 million worth of approvals in a month, it's significant.
Wow.
So I'd like to see construction costs and capital spending under control. And I think what I've learned in bureaucracies too is that purse strings make a big difference. So if you started charging rent back to departments or to schools for some of these major capital spends, I think this would correct itself pretty quickly because people would rein in spending.
Yeah.
And not let it get out of control. and they would make a decision about what was more important to them. But if I went to you and said, hey, I'll give you a $100,000 budget for a car, you're probably not going to come back with a $20,000 car.
Yeah.
So that's one of my concerns is construction and capital budgeting. Second one, and this one's really important to me, is the economic impact of the university in rural areas and the using the university to drive job creation in the state. I think if you ask anyone across the political spectrum what's important for the state and how can the university help most, they would say, you know, bring more jobs to the area, help recruit jobs, help retool our workforce so that we're competitive. So that's kind of important for me out there, too.
Yeah.
And that leads into the third thing that's important for me, which is online ed. And that's meeting people in these different rural areas or people that are working with a solution that meets their time requirements and also is affordable for them. So if that person is living in a rural community in North Carolina and wants to study at 2 o'clock in the morning or study at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they can. We make it asynchronous. We allow them to learn when they want to, and we find a way to make that less expensive for them. And then that way they don't have to deal with the room and board, and they don't have to deal with different fees. They just kind of have an education that's suited to their needs.
I think that's incredibly insightful as far as focus. And let me go back to the first thing that you said, Marty, because last year when Governor McCrory, or 2 years ago, when he was traveling the state and really touting his Connect NC bond, the $2 billion that was going to be spent for this and that, various things across the state. One of the things that I heard was from people saying, well, wait a minute, some of these buildings, for example, I think one of them was proposed that a new nursing or facility be built or education facility at Carolina. And I heard people when I was interviewing them saying, you know, they're not filling out the classrooms for the one they got. And so I think that what needs to happen is, you know, before this money is spent, maybe the actual need ought to be looked at a little bit. Am I off base there? Or
no, actually, I brought that up today. I was on a call, Board of Governors call about construction this morning. And space utilization is a big question. Understanding how our, I think the number was something, it was in the tens of millions of feet of space the university system has. And we've got to find a way to make sure it's being utilized properly, but also just not have these massive capital spends, especially if we're headed towards online ed.
Yeah.
If you look at most students walking around today or most kids, they've got some form of electronics in their hand at all times. And we need to meet them where they want their education, not tell them this is the way that we're going to offer it to you.
Now, I want to also ask you this, because in my conversations through this forum and others that I have been involved in, I have been exposed to the fact that the community colleges in North Carolina, Marty, are really getting a lot of attention. And I was talking with someone the other day that said that a person graduating with a community college degree in nursing, for example, as opposed to someone graduating with a four-year degree in nursing, the community college graduate, studies are showing, is making more money. Is there a pressure on the university system with you guys that are serving on the Board of Governors to look at, okay, the community colleges are becoming, you know, more of a priority or more prevalent or, you know, more popular? Does that put any pressure on the university system?
Well, there's a great website out there called nctower.com, and it has data on there for both the university system and the community college system by campus and by degree, and you can see what job placement rates are like, and you can see what income levels are like. And it's eye-opening. You know, when we look out there and see that there's some degrees and some students graduating and they're not making enough to pay back their student loans if they've taken them out, there's a problem. And I think part of this is, for me, let the free market control, but we need to make sure every student and every family, if they're financially supporting their students, is very aware of the actual data, that they're not sold something that's not true, that they can see all of this data, understand what they're getting into. And if they pick a major where they know they're going to graduate and make $18,000 and over the course of 10 years, maybe go up to 25, and they think that that's a good decision, then they can make that decision. If they're not aware of that and they're being told, let's say instead, that all degrees are equal and that they will make $45,000 when they graduate, then we've misled them. And so I'm about empowering the students and the parents to make an informed decision here.
Are you, you say you've served on the Board of Governors for 3.5 years. Things happen at light speed with technology and everything in our society now. Is there anything that stands out to you as being significant in your mind about how education, at least higher education, has changed during your time on the board?
Online ed continues to grow at a significant pace. You've got as many, let's say, full-time online ed students out there, or only online ed students out there, as you do in some of our larger universities. And it's hitting a lot of people. And it's a trend that we can't ignore. It's something that's not always popular because people don't always want to do it. And there's some controversy out there about how effective it is. But a blended model that's both online and in-person is showing to be very effective. I also think that on the horizon, we're going to be looking more at the gamification of education. The idea that you don't realize you're learning, but you're having fun while you're doing it. And great professors will do that in their classrooms. And there are a lot of really interesting online approaches to do the same thing.
I think that one of the things that we're hearing a lot in the K-12 arena, Marty, is that choice has become really prevalent in the minds of parents. They are wanting, parents are wanting choice. They're looking at charter schools. They're looking at private schools. They're looking at opportunity scholarships. They're homeschooling. And my question to the folks in the public school systems is, instead of fighting this, perhaps you should look at this as an opportunity to improve, because if so many parents are not wanting to go to public schools, have their kids go to public schools, then maybe that ought to alert you that maybe something's wrong and you need to, you know, embrace this as competition. Is the bricks and mortar...
I agree with that sentiment wholeheartedly. When I was on ed planning, we would have to approve other programs coming into the state. And you would hear occasionally people say things like, well, do we have to approve it? Or that's competition for our system. Mm-hmm. And every time someone would bring that up, I would jump in and vehemently defend the right of these other programs to come in. We're not in the business of having a monopoly on education. We are in the business of educating the people of the state in whatever form or fashion they want. It's not our job to run this as a monopoly and protect the economic interest of the university. Our job, again, is to educate the people of the state as free as practicable. And oftentimes people forget that. They get very focused on, well, this is our school and our program, and we don't want any competition for it. But that's a very flawed approach.
Yeah, well, no, I think you're spot on there. But I was going to ask, is the online wave, and you've mentioned it, online education a couple of times, is that being embraced by higher education, or are the traditional bricks and mortar folks kind of wary of that?
Well, there are some schools doing it, and UNC system has made some progress. We'll see what happens over the next couple of years. We just lost one of our key people in the online ed arena to Duke University recently, mm-hmm. With some changes to the administration. But I think that there are people doing it very successfully. Is it being embraced by the schools? Yes and no. There are some people that are embracing it, but I'd say there are a lot of people that don't want to embrace it. And it really comes down to one thing. And again, the one thing that comes up over and over and over in bureaucracies is money.
Yeah.
So, you know, who gets the money when you take an online class? You know, who's going to pay for developing a class? Do you share that information with another school, or do you try and hoard it because you're not going to get paid enough for it? And so oftentimes people are squabbling over dollars and they're forgetting about the students. And they forget that the whole UNC system is owned by the people of the state.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about something. And by the way, I could talk to you for hours about education because your perspective is phenomenal. But I must respect your time. But before I let you go, I want to ask you about an event that unfortunately I was not able to attend last week, but it sounds pretty cool. Some virtual reality stuff.
Yeah, this is a great example of School of the Arts has been at the forefront of virtual reality filmmaking and virtual reality systems. And I had the chance in December to go over and see some of the stuff they were doing. And Susan Ruskin, who heads up the filmmaking school, gave me a great quick tour of what they were doing. And I tried on a couple of the things and was so impressed that we immediately, I had my head of IT research the systems out there, and we acquired technology to do that from the private sector. And built our own private sector virtual reality theater in Greensboro. We're calling it the Red Holodeck.
Wow.
But the Raleigh event was where we took that technology and moved it over into one of our vacant restaurant spaces in Raleigh, a space we just had come available that's for lease. And so we did an event in North Raleigh and invited people in and had a chance to show them around different areas where we have property. This is cutting edge, bleeding edge technology out there.
Wow.
And it involves a few different things. One is kind of a Google Earth model, but in a 3D system. So when you're standing there, you feel like you're maybe walking through a downtown, and the buildings are so real that people are stepping over them or thinking that they can lean on or kind of climb on a building. It's that real. The second thing we're doing is a 360 video that allows you to virtually tour. And I did this recently with, I went over and filmed in the North Carolina A&T's Baja car program, which is a great program, by the way. And so I toured through there and filmed it. And so I was able to show a couple friends, and they were able to put on a headset, and it's like they're walking through the building with me.
Wow.
Which is amazing. So some really neat technology out there. We were able to bring the stuff we're doing all over the state to Raleigh and show people. And we've offered it up for economic development use for free. So we'd like to use this to help bring jobs to North Carolina and help promote areas, especially the rural areas, that could use some more jobs.
You know, we could talk about that for a long time, but unfortunately, we'll have to wait till another segment. But I must tell our listeners that you have got a lot going on, and they can find a great variety and a lot of, as you say, cutting edge places to eat and places to relax and enjoy one another's company all over the triad, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you're getting it done, Marty.
We've got a lot of fun. Got a lot of fun objects, a lot of fun projects, and we've got a lot of fun concepts out there too that we're working through. And we hope to bring Daryl's pretty soon to Raleigh. And we're working on projects in Fayetteville and Greenville.
So. You knew I was going to ask you about that again.
Head east soon.
You knew I was going to ask you about that again. So anyway, Marty, thank you very much. Marty Kotis, member of the Board of Governors, successful leading edge developer in North Carolina. We always appreciate your time, and thank you very much, sir.
Glad to. Thank you, Mark.
All right. I absolutely love Marty Kotis. He's a good friend. He's always treated me with great respect. And I told you, I said at the very beginning, this was going to be a good interview. And I think I was spot on with that prediction. Marty is not only intelligent, he has business savvy, and he just is able to articulate his thoughts in a way that makes a whole lot of sense to me. I loved what he said about competition, how, you know, in the public school system right now, we're seeing the demand for school choice surging, and hopefully the folks in the public school system, the traditional public schools, will not continue to bristle against that. As you know, we had former superintendent of public instruction, Dr. Gene Atkinson, on the show a couple of weeks ago. By the way, I'm not aware of any other in-depth interviews that she has given, and so we're very thankful that she spent about 30 minutes with us here on What Matters in North Carolina. And you can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to that very, very telling interview. It was delightful. She's such a nice person, and I really love Dr. Atkinson, even though we're on different sides of the political spectrum. But I talked with her about school choice, and a lot of the folks in the bureaucracy just really bristle against the notion of school choice. But folks, in North Carolina and nationally, there is a wave, a tsunami of sorts, of demand for school choice, whether it be private schools, public charter schools, homeschools. Parents are saying, we want choice. Now, instead of resisting that, and I asked Dr. Atkinson about this, I said, why don't you guys who have served so long in the traditional public school arena embrace this as an opportunity to kind of rethink and say, maybe we're not doing all that we can. Maybe this is a good opportunity to allow competition to, you know, run its course, and we can ask ourselves, what can we do better? Well, you know what? Marty Kotis says, yeah, that's an awesome thought, and it also applies to the traditional bricks and mortar schools that we have in the university system. He talked a lot, as you heard, about online education. Folks, things are changing. Education is changing. And had a pastor a long time ago that used to say, change is like riding a roller coaster, and you got to hang on when you hit that curve, otherwise you'll fly out. And I think that that's what's happening, or could happen, in the arena of education. If people don't embrace change and hold on and ride with it, they're going to get tossed out. And I think we're seeing a lot of pressure on traditional forms of education. And what is the response going to be? Is it going to be one of embracing change and really putting the focus back on the kids in the traditional schools, K through 12, and on the students in the higher education system? We've seen community colleges exploding in North Carolina. Why? Because there's a demand for the educational opportunities that community colleges present. And so we're very grateful for Marty Kotis. We're excited that he's our guest, and he comes on regularly whenever we want to talk about things that have to do with the Board of Governors and with higher education, and he's a great friend of the show, and we really appreciate his being here on What Matters in North Carolina. And you know what is really exciting to me? I didn't have to ask him this time about bringing Daryl's back to Raleigh. I don't know how many of you listening have ever eaten at Darrell's. In Raleigh, Darrell's used to be a big thing. When I first moved here, there were multiple locations. And they had, before your meal would come out, they'd bring out these homemade crackers. And I'm telling you, they were absolutely awesome. So the thought of Darrell's returning to Raleigh is pretty exciting to me. And that's what a good friend will do. They'll beat you to the question. And I've asked Marty before about bringing them back to Raleigh, and he beat me to the punch this time and said, "Mark, we're coming. Just hang on." So I'm excited about that. You know what I'm really excited about? I'm excited about this podcast because it's really, really kind of humbling to be able to get behind this microphone and share with you the guests that are willing to come on the show and be candid and talk with us about the bills that they have filed. For example, if it's someone in the General Assembly, we had a lengthy conversation with Representative Nelson Dollar last week. You can go to freedomactionnetwork.com and find that there, talking about his House Bill 7, which would require the state to set money aside in the Savings Reserve Fund. You might know it as the Rainy Day Fund. Good idea. And he explained that to us. And guess what? Tomorrow, you do not want to miss tomorrow, because Representative Larry Pittman will join us to talk about the bill that he has filed, making North Carolina a constitutional carry state. Now, for those of you who are gun enthusiasts, who really hold the Second Amendment near and dear to your heart, you do not want to miss this edition of What Matters in North Carolina. In fact, I'm sure you have friends and family members. If you're a gun enthusiast, you have friends and a circle of acquaintances that are as well. So tell them, look, you got to tune in. You got to download the podcast, What Matters in North Carolina. That will be Thursday, February 16th, tomorrow. They can find us, as you know, at freedomactionnetwork.com or in the iTunes and Google Play stores. And while you're at it, if you haven't already done so, go ahead and subscribe to the show. You can do that, as I said, at iTunes or Google Play. Get your friends and family to do that. You can find us every day at freedomactionnetwork.com, and we'd love to have you as a regular listener. Listen, where else in the state are you going to find, in 1 week so far, Monday, we were able to, actually yesterday, Tuesday, we were able to talk with Dr. Mike Adams, one of the more controversial college professors, not just here in North Carolina, but in the entire nation, folks. And he spent about 25 minutes with us. It was fabulous. I encourage you to listen to that. Wednesday, here we are with Marty Kotus, one of the most successful developers in the state, member of the Board of Governors, candidly sharing his thoughts on education. Tomorrow, we will be speaking with Representative Larry Pittman, filing a bill that, for those of you who are really staunch supporters of the Second Amendment, should really get you excited. He's going to, I'm going to ask him about the bill, what he sees as possible objections that people might raise. Is he getting support early on for the bill? So I am really excited, and I know that you will be too. But my question to you is, where in North Carolina are you going to find this? I don't know of any other radio station, radio show, radio program, podcast, live stream, anywhere that is bringing the guests and the content that you can find Monday through Friday, week after week, right here on What Matters in North Carolina. So we are excited about the program. We are excited about the show, and we are excited about you, our listener. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to all of the great content that we are working so hard to bring to you here at What Matters in North Carolina. And while I'm at it, I'm going to give a plug for the other shows on Freedom Action Network. You may not be aware of this, maybe you are, but speaking of guns, NC Gun Dad is a show specifically targeted to gun owners, and a lot of fascinating, interesting, cutting-edge information that our own Matt Calder brings you at NC Gun Dad. We also have Free to Brew, and Greg Pulcher is very much on top of everything that's going on in the craft beer industry here in North Carolina and across the country. In fact, we're going to have Greg on soon because there are a couple of bills in the General Assembly that are related to that. And why do we want to do that? Because if you're a conservative like I am and like we are here at What Matters in North Carolina, the whole craft beer industry is a perfect example of how government just needs to get out of the way, you know, and let this thing evolve and grow and do whatever the market is going to allow it to do. And there are a lot of things at play. You know, there are a lot of old time big breweries that are saying, whoa, we can't let this thing, you know, get out of hand. So Greg is on top of all of that. And it's a great example of conservatism at its best, where government needs to get out of the way of an industry, out of a market that is growing on its own. And if government would just let it happen, the craft beer industry would explode. Why is that important? Do we all just want to sit around and drink? Well, no. But what we do want to see is opportunity. We do want to see entrepreneurs be able to enter a market and be successful and meet the growing demand for a product, which in this particular case happens to be craft beer. So, freedomactionnetwork.com. Bookmark that website. Listen to the NC Gundad Show. Listen to Free to Brew. And as always, of course, listen to What Matters in North Carolina. We appreciate you listening. And until next time, thank you so much for being a part of What Matters in North Carolina.